You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Certainly an appropriate song for those of us in this particular line of business, and I am so thrilled to be joined again by Horace the Avenger himself, Tim Murdoch, a true Renaissance man. He goes back to the school of Bob Whitaker. Of course, Bob was a great friend of ours as well, the former Reagan administration appointee, the author Bob Whitaker, and Tim Murdoch. You can follow his work now at WhiteRabbitRadio.biz, WhiteRabbitRadio.biz, and Tim, I watched again this week the How Whites Took Over America video. Hard to believe that's coming up on being a decade old, but for the people who haven't seen it, Bob Whitaker voices the Indian chief in that particular production. I'm going to repost it to my website this week. That is a timeless classic. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you.
It's great to be on here. It's always an honor to be on with you here, James, on the Political Cesspool, a legendary show. It's been around longer than me, and I like that. I like the fact that we've been around, been able to make it out so long, and we both have the same background, the same pedigrees and that type of thing. Yeah, How Whites Took Over America Part 1 came out pretty quick. We were able to get that out pretty quick, a bunch of access, and Bob voices the Indian chief, and you can still hear his voice, and it was absolutely positively hilarious.
It will be reposted to our website, ladies and gentlemen, this week. If you don't know what we're talking about, you got to see it. This is a must-see, truly. And if you have seen it before, it wouldn't hurt to see it again. I watched the whole thing again just a couple of days ago in preparation for Tim's appearance tonight. And we've got a lot of contemporary topics to cover this evening. But first, Tim, you and I was traveling out of town with my wife and kids a couple of days ago. We talked on the phone for about an hour as I was driving, had you on the overhead system there in the car. And we talked about Trump, of course, about being a strategic Trump voter, as you called it. And again, we talked for over an hour, and I remember telling you, as I so often say with Keith Alexander, if we could have bottled this up and played it on the radio, we'd be hard-pressed to do better. But you were talking about being a strategic Trump voter, rooting for him, voting for him twice, as you and I both did, but not being willing to put our life on the line for the guy. What do you mean by that in retrospect now as we enter into the first 2 weeks of the Biden regime and we can begin to reflect and as the dust settles on the Trump era?
Well, you know, I always go by Bob's advice and all his advice he told me before he passed away of what we'd see as the end comes and stuff like that. But he talked about eventually the enemy's going to come after everything. And once you get signs that that's happening, don't stick your neck out and don't do anything. But he also had other words of wisdom. You know, don't ever go to the mattresses for anyone or go to the line, go to the carpet for anyone that's not openly on our side, that you don't know their bona fides. You know, I know what you're about, James. So if you're saying you're running for office and I'm marching down the street for you, I know what I'm getting into. I know where you're going to be. I know you're going to be at the front of the line. By Trump, by 2020, there's something we knew, that either the man was too blackmailed, either he was too narcissistic. I don't know. But, you know, he's not pardoning any of the people that got him elected that ended up going to jail. There's guys that got him elected. This guy would not have been elected with guys like Ricky Vaughn. Now, I got away from Ricky Vaughn. I didn't like a lot of things about a particular individual that is probably going to jail for a long time for the meme wars, for whatever reason. And he was a subject of a Tucker Carlson episode and everything else. I didn't like some of those particular characters because they tend to stir the pot a lot. But at the same time, here's the thing. Without these guys, Trump wouldn't have been elected. And there's a lot of guys in jail right now that Trump wouldn't have got elected without. And you know, he didn't pardon any of them. He's pardoning Kwame Kilpatrick, but not these guys. And we just can't put our neck on the line and start marching up and down the street and going, you know, I'm not going to put my neck on the line for anyone that ain't putting their neck on the line for me. That's just that simple.
Tim, this is Keith Alexander.
Sure.
Put your finger on it. What was wrong about Trump? Why was he not what we really thought we were getting? At least a lot of people did. And on the other hand, why do a lot of people insist on ignoring the evidence and thinking that he's, you know, going to come back riding a white stallion and save us all?
There is so much propaganda. There was some of the most successful information warfare coming into 2016 and coming into 2020 that we've ever seen. You have a lot of very powerful people repeating lines from Q. Again, we've never seen this type of information warfare unleashed into politics from the right-wing side. And I think that's had a tremendous effect on people. And I don't know. People are just brainwashed, basically. I would like to believe that there's going to be someone on the white horse like Trump, but Trump is far too establishment. I mean, no sooner than he was elected, Bob Whitaker said, okay, the fun is over, the establishment's back in, meaning they already had him. They already had him. He was going to do whatever he was told to do. This was Bob Word, exactly on his blog. You can go read it. The party's over, get back to work. It's over with for Trump. He's not going to be, you know, whatever was going on that was amusing was over with. Now, there was a lot of strange stuff prior to the last election with Trump appointments, even after he lost to the defense. And I didn't know what was going to happen as a result. But we can't really trust someone to march up and down the street for them. You know, Putin is someone that I like a lot of his international policies. I like his policy toward GMO foods. He bans them. I like his policy in abiding by international rules and norms. There's a lot I don't like about him. He would throw me in jail in Russia in a heartbeat probably for being outwardly pro-white. But so, I mean, we can't go and start marching up down the street with people that aren't openly on our side because it's just too risky. It's too risky for James and his family. Unless you can guarantee a pardon. Now, if you can guarantee a pardon, there you go. But well, I'm not Kwame Kilpatrick. You know, I'm not the...
Let me ask you this, if I could, Tim. He
sure.
Definitely has a large, large blind spot on the question of Jewish power and influence. And again,
well,
what happened? He got stabbed in the back by Netanyahu.
No. He doesn't have a blind spot on Jewish power. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. It's part of the game, and he's part of the game, or co-opted by the game. He wasn't supposed to win in 2016. Most of the Stop the Steal stuff, if you look at the original website, that goes back to prior to 2000. They were ready to lose.
You're exactly right.
They were ready to lose. And this time they went all out, and Trump raised a bunch of money. Look, once the establishment has their hooks in you, they probably had serious blackmail material on Trump. He was a prodigy of Roy Cohn. So he's not blind to the JQ. He's not blind to the Jewish question. He is willfully ignorant on it. We can't cut people that big of a slack anymore. Look, he was what he was. He would have been amusing to get reelected. He was the outlier. And they weren't going to let the same thing happen again, no matter what they had to do. It's kind of obvious. You know, they're here to do whatever it is they're going to do. And if you get in their way, they're going to try to jail you or worse. And what I'm saying is not that, you know, hey, you got to say what you got to say. You got to stand up for what you got to stand up for. But the idea that we're going to march up and down the street, I'm going to do everything but march up and down the street behind someone I know is doesn't have my back. Because when you come out and give, the man gave a, he basically gave 80 to 90% of a Velvet Revolution speech you'd hear in Eastern Europe or something. Minus, you know, he said, I'm going to march with you. And, you know, where is his kids? Where's John Jr.? None of them are marching with those guys. None of them were there. And so it's kind of cynical to have all these rallies to be flying over them in a helicopter. Look, if you're 50,000 people out for me and I'm in my SUV, I'm not driving by, I'm getting out of the SUV, I have Praetorian guards there, I have a bulletproof SUV, and I'm grabbing a microphone or a megaphone and I'm saying something. That's what James is going to do. That's what you're going to do with 50,000 people showing up that are going to die for you. Basically, that's what these people will do. So, I mean, sooner or later, you can't cut the guy any break. I mean, he lost for a lot of different reasons, but one of the reasons he lost is he just couldn't do enough to bring out his base. And he didn't do anything for them, because pardoning the Kwame Kilpatricks is not going to bring out your base if you're Donald Trump. You know, maybe okay, he brought out enough to win. Maybe they stole it from. Maybe they didn't. I don't know how history is going to be written. In my state, everyone believes it was stolen, so I have no way to argue with that. But he could have made it a lot more difficult if he would have appealed to his base. Go ahead.
Yeah, Tim, just let me ask you this. They're obviously not going to impeach him. The purpose of impeachment was to keep him from running again. Should he run again there would be anything different? Do you think he'd do anything better, or would it be a replay of the first term?
Well, I think they're scared to death of him. This is the mystery. They're scared to death of him for some reason. Mitch McConnell, with his Chinese wife, they're scared to death of Trump for some reason. I just can't figure out why. I cannot figure out why for the life of me what is going on with Trump, because the only reason you would impeach him is to try to make sure he cannot get back into office under any conventional ways. I just don't know why they're bothering with it. I can't figure it out. I can't figure out, you know, this guy on November 18th, just after he lost the election, he put in place, actually activated, was knowledgeable enough, or someone was around him knowledgeable enough to activate National Security Action Memorandum 57. Now, that was put in place by John F. Kennedy, and it strips all the power away from the CIA for covert affairs and moves it formally to the DOD. He does this. It's not been a touch since JFK. And the reason JFK didn't activate it, he got killed. Remember that. So this was between the JFK's war with the CIA. So we have this guy, and that's just one example. There's a dozen examples of stuff Trump's doing after he lost the election that does not make any sense for a guy that doesn't have some kind of plans for the future, that isn't working with somebody. I just couldn't figure out. No one can figure out what's really going on.
All right, hold on right there, gentlemen. Hold on right there. For whatever reason, it looks like we blew through a commercial break. That's fine. Yeah, everybody at home is just getting a little more content here, but I do like to use the commercial breaks as a little forced pause so we can reassess and move on to a different topic. There was several topics, several entirely different topics. Yeah, right. Several entirely different topics that I wanted to cover with Tim tonight, but you're getting just a taste of why Tim is really at the tip of the spear with regards to our commentators. A man who can articulate the issues, has strong opinions. He's a guy you should be listening to, ladies and gentlemen. He comes with our heartiest endorsement. Be sure to check him out at whiterabbitradio.biz. That's .biz, whiterabbitradio.biz. Tim, though, I want to switch to one of this is an entirely abrupt transition here from what we were talking about a moment ago. But if we could, I'd like to make a transition into what I think is in some way the most fascinating story I think I've ever heard of, at least in the 16 years I've been on the radio. What happened with GameStop? What happened with Wall Street? What's going on with the market, the hedge funds, the billionaires? This is a very interesting story. First of all, I will ask you what you believe the ramifications might be going forward. But break it down. GameStop for Dummies. What are we talking about?
What we're talking about is 1902 repeated. In the beginning of the 19th century, we have a famous company called Northern Railroad. And Northern Railroad was at under $40. And the Harrison brothers had ganged up with a couple others because there was a giant float. In other words, the problem with GameStop was that it was 150% short, meaning that people had borrowed shares. Large speculators, hedge funds, had borrowed shares that didn't exist. When you hear of a float at negative 150, it means they borrowed 50, anywhere from 40 to 60% of the shares that weren't in existence and sold it short to profit from the downside. Now, the stock's approaching zero. And when a stock's approaching zero, the most you can make if you're shorting from $4 is $4 to zero. And 100% of nothing's nothing. So the problem with GameStop is it had this enormous amount of speculators shorting stock that didn't exist. It's Northern Railroad, 1902 all over again. In 1902, the Harris, I think it was the Harrison brothers, the name escapes me, Kuhn Loeb was in on it, famous brokers of the age, against another another group of speculators. And they drove the price from 40 to 1,000, and J.P. Morgan had to bust it because he was afraid it was going to bust the young New York Stock Exchange at the time. They had to bust the actual short squeeze. Okay, so what had happened is in GameStop, you had all these speculators that were short a stock that people on Wall Street Bets, a Reddit forum, thought there was some value. There was actual financial advisors on there. They thought the breakup value was much higher. And so they were buying this stuff. One financial advisor from out east bought a $50,000 worth, and at the height was actually he's still up over $30, $40 million. Okay, so what happened was they shorted stock that they didn't own that wasn't in existence. And once they got the ball rolling, once the squeeze was on, it was serious pain. No different than 1902. The phrase from J.P. Morgan was, he that sells what isn't his'n must buy it back or go to prison. Or was it Morgan? It was someone in that particular short squeeze. But this is the history of Wall Street. If you're selling short a stock, and let's say the float is like 60%, or it's like 60% of the shares available for short, that's fine. Because if you go to get out, you're going to be able to buy back that stock to get out. Do you understand? I mean, basically, it's like owning a pair of shoes. But imagine you don't own it, and you think those pair of shoes are going down in price. So you borrow it and sell it short. Well, you got to buy it back at some price because you don't own it. And it hurts. And it hurts bad when you start doing it. And these guys should have known better. They should have let them lose a lot more money, in my opinion.
Well, Tim, so this has just caused, apparently, just untold discontent with the elites, with Wall Street. I literally saw with my own eyes. I'm not saying he was pouting; he was mad, literal tears, crying. This billionaire who was crying, saying he was just trying to make a living, and then all this happened. What are the ramifications of this going forward, and will there be a reckoning, or will the empire strike back? I mean, we've already seen some shenanigans with regards to Robin Hood. Maybe you can explain what that is.
Tell us what Robin Hood is all about.
Robin Hood is we've got a very frothy market. You're most likely at a market top or an intermediate high. This is the type of thing that happens right before big breaks, by the way, is everyone's trading on apps on their phone. Robinhood is a broker that poses as a free broker on your phone. It's not a free broker because there's no such thing as free. Robinhood sells its trading data, and all of its clearing is done by Citadel. Citadel is owned by Ken Griffey out of Chicago. He was a famous electronic, basically hedge fund trader who had such great infrastructure, he decided to create a brokerage. A brokerage of brokerage, and he got so big he's now controlling whole sections of the market. And so what happened was Robinhood got in trouble in this particular thing because everyone, like 80% of their app owners, owned GameStop. So it was just a mess on the elite's end. But the elites, you basically have a bunch of, for lack of a better word, Jewish hedge fund billionaires who are basically getting squeezed by Reddit. And so it's basically anarcho-populism. They're squeezing. They squeeze the, and it's not over with. It's just beginning. And
that ain't supposed to happen.
They did it with good old fashioned analysis. These guys were 160% short. In other words, well, depending on who you get your numbers from, we know it was a good 140, meaning 40% of the shares short didn't exist. So where are you going to buy them back from if no one's selling? because there's nothing there to buy. So they got caught in a classic scenario right out of 1902, right out of education of a speculator. They got their tails handed to them, and it was bailout city. It was blood in the streets behind the scenes. They were crying uncle right, left, and center. And then they had to get on TV and explain it, in which they have no explanation. So these kids from Reddit and these young fellows and gals, they're pissed off. They're really pissed off, and it is anarcho-populism. It's going to have massive ramifications. The market is free for me, but not for thee.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, going forward, and I mean, you're talking about these guys losing. I saw upwards of $100 billion has been lost as a result of the action that the Redditors have made. $14 billion, I think, in a day alone, that these hedge fund people. And it has created some classic memes. The hedge fund cries out in pain as it shorts you. And I saw Brother Nathaniel. Brother Nathaniel was dancing around in the streets of Boston a couple of days ago in front of the Federal Reserve building there.
Yeah.
taunting the building over all of this. So you've got a lot of stuff going on. And I just wonder, though, is the government going to bail out the billionaires? Are they going to crack down on the people who were able to beat them at their own game, even though they broke no laws? God only knows.
Okay, what happened was it was a classic 1902 scenario. To raise money, these funds and a lot of their backers, because they're all connected, really. It's one giant web, right? They were all raising money by shorting the stock market or selling stocks. So they had to basically sell out of other holdings to raise that money. And as they were raising money, the stock market started to fall, and it started falling aggressively, which is what happened. Because they were over-leveraged to begin with. So what they did was they stepped in and they went basically all these particular apps and brokerages, because it wasn't just GameStop. It was Bed Bath & Beyond. It was AMC Theaters. These Redditors had found a bunch of different stocks that, one, you had speculators over-short. They were short shares that didn't exist, ripe for a rally, right? Two, they were undervalued in their minds. So they were buying up all these stocks. There was a handful of them, and they put them on a restricted list. Now, what that means is if you own GameStop, you're in liquidation only. Now, Robinhood liquidated a bunch of people, forced liquidated at Lowe's, and that caused a lot of problems. That's going to cause lawsuits after lawsuits. Because going into liquidation only is one thing, but you can't force liquidate. And, I don't know, but a lot of people are getting pissed off over this stuff. And it's going to be fun to watch.
Let me say this. What is the SEC in all of this?
The SEC is trying to protect the integrity of the market. The repository of wealth in the United States is held up by the credibility of the stock market. And the credibility of the stock market is held up as long as the stock market holds up. So if you start talking about a mini crash of like the early 1900s, if you start talking about a 30% crash, you're talking about blood. They won't let it happen if they can avoid it. Now, I don't know. I don't know what they can do to eventually not have their heads handed to them, because the guys on Redditor found out something quite clever. Like, their own short, they're way too short these stocks, and these stocks have some amount of value. Now, GameStop probably ain't worth $400, but it's worth whatever a seller's willing to meet you at. But it was worth a lot more than they had it driven down to. AMC, the same thing. Now, AMC was halted. Now, AMC is the big, for foreign listeners, AMC is a big theater owner across America, and they were getting slaughtered because of COVID-19. But, they have other assets. They are worth something, you know. And your guess is as good as mine, James. I'll be listening to Political Cesspool to find out where it's all going. But it's a great time to be a commentator.
Well, you know, Tim, this is Keith again. Margin trading was what I understand, at least, you know, based on my vague memories of history, led to the depression, you know, and the stock market crash in 1929. Do we have any potential for that here?
We don't have anywhere. They were margining stocks at like 10% and 5% and all kinds of crazy stuff. Our margin is 50%. Portfolio margin, depending, might be 30-40%. We don't have it. Most of these places weren't margined. Most modern day hedge funds are not margined, because you can't get investors if you're too leveraged, or it's very difficult. But most of these places, the problem was that they were short stocks from 13 and they're having to buy it back at 400 or 1,000 or wherever. And you're going to get wiped out pretty quickly if you're playing those games. The problem was that the size of the move and the quickness of the move and the fact that they were short something they didn't own with a float. In other words, I can't stress this enough, 140% of the stock that they were short didn't exist. So there was none to buy back. They were short something that didn't exist. And that's crazy stuff. You would think from a risk management standpoint, they will definitely think twice about that one. But I don't think so. I do think they went out of their way to play these games and to rig this market. And they might get themselves into trouble one morning they can't get out of. I just don't know when that morning is.
All right. Well, listen, it's like you said, Tim, God only knows where this is going to go. We've been troubleshooting some issues on the break, so we've skipped through our first two breaks of this segment. I'll tell you, if anybody would have bet, who would have been the only guest in political cesspool history to not have to go to a commercial break, and it was Tim Murdoch, you'd have made a lot of money on that one. But
let me ask Tim one more question on this.
We got to transition away, but before you ask that, Keith, and we got to transition on this because I got two more hot topics we got to get Tim to weigh in on. But it is like Tim said, Keith. And that is, it is an interesting time to be a commentator because this is relatively unprecedented. I mean, Tim goes back to 1902.
Did the regulatory group of the SEC or whoever miss the signal or something to allow this to happen? Or is this something that's just nothing can be done about?
Quick answer on that one, Tim.
No, these kids just outsmarted. They outsmarted the hedge funds.
All right, now let me ask you this before we transition to the next topic, because this will be a topic we will revisit, Keith. I mean, obviously, this isn't something that's just going to be tucked away neatly and not going to be a story next week. I mean, the shockwaves from this are going to last quite a while. Some very powerful figures. I mean, you're talking about billions, tens of billions of dollars of losses, $100 billion plus of losses. But we talked about the losses there, Tim. Did any kids sitting around and, unemployed due to COVID, sitting around in their mom's living room, did they make bank this week?
I think some might have. A lot of them probably end up losing money on it because they probably didn't get out in time. Some of them are still holding. Yeah, I mean, there's people, anytime you get into a market that's moving like this, everyone's got apps on their phone. They buy a stock and they make a lot of money overnight. That's happening. It's also people are probably going to end up losing a lot of money unless you're a savvy trader or speculator, which we all have them in our family. I have a family, you got them in Tennessee there. I know, James, where people are clever horse traders or clever at buying, selling tractors or something. You know, now if you can do that in stocks, you can make a lot of money. It's just the way it is. Right. Someone's always making money and someone's always losing it. You know, it just depends on how good you are at that or what your skill set is. I don't know. But I think having kids sit around, I don't know how much this sitting around thing matters because, you know, you got kids in college dorms. You got kids on the job working, putting a few dollars. Robinhood will let you invest in a few shares of stock with just a dollar. You can invest with as low as a dollar. That was their big thing. It's just nothing's free. And as the people found out, they weren't using a real broker.
All right, let's pause that conversation there, and let's move back to the Republican Party. So we've seen that the Democrats are coming down heavy-handed. They are overzealous in their retaliations. You saw Kevin McCarthy down meeting with Trump in Florida. If it wasn't for the demographic onslaught that I don't think the Republicans are going to be able to maneuver around, I think the Democrats are going to go so far so fast that it would make conditions ripe for somebody like Trump or Trump himself to come back in 2024. Not that that's good or bad from our position, as you articulated earlier in the hour, Tim, but nevertheless, these are the situations we're dealing with. And, of course, we remember that Trump was not able to advance a lot of legislative victories for his base. He did some executive orders, which has been overturned by Joe Biden and then some. But there are a couple of Republicans that are interesting to me, Tim. They're both women. It looks as though these women have a bigger set of cojones than the Republican men. But Lauren Boebert out of Colorado is one, and Marjorie Taylor Greene out of Georgia is certainly another. There have already been calls from the Democrats and, of course, some of the cucks and the Republicans to expel these people. Now, these two women were elected by their districts, okay? So I don't know how you expel them for articulating beliefs that are unpopular with the regime, but let's focus first on Marjorie Taylor Greene, this blonde woman representing the 14th Congressional District in the U.S. House out of Georgia. I mean, they are after her hammer and tong, and she has said some things that certainly raise some eyebrows. What do we know about her, Tim?
Well, what we know about her is that, you know, this is one of the things that I didn't like about QAnon. They take the legitimate issues. Let's talk about Jeffrey Epstein, pedophilia, Jimmy Savile, pedophile, pedophile elites, weird people in charge doing weird things, right? And we mix it with sacrificing children, or you mix it with allegations that you mix proven allegations with unproven allegations. I don't like that type of thing because it muddies the water. Let's stick to the facts. But she does say some funny things to me, some amusing things, and some great for radio stuff. Tonight on a live stream, I covered her statement where she had said, apparently, and I couldn't get the exact quote, but this has been repeated by the medium ad nauseum, but so they got it on tape or something, where she said the California wildfires were caused by Israeli lasers. Now, that's funny stuff. So she makes some good stuff. She mixed. Now she might have been trolling. That would be the best read on it. But the worst read is that she's a little bit too conspiratorial and says some funny things. I guess if she's openly pro-white, she'd be good no matter what. But I really wish people would, you know, save your allegations for wild speculation for private if you're running for office and stick with facts, stick with things we can prove. Now, I'm not saying California wildfires weren't caused by Israeli lasers. I can't prove or disprove that. But until we can prove it, we gotta watch. Because what you do is you start hurting your credibility to some extent. But, yeah, you're right. They did vote for her. So what does that tell us? So, you know, someone loved her. But it's
a well, let me tell you, she's a Republican version of AOC, I think.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, she's better than that. And then Boebert with the guns. And, I mean, these people are saying, well, I mean, what adjective do I want to use here? Interesting things, to say the least. But what got me about it, Tim, was the calls for expulsion. You can expel them for saying Jewish space lasers caused the fire. You can disagree with them on that, maybe, or present evidence to the contrary.
What about that guy from Georgia that said that we can't send more troops or something to Guam because the island's out of capsize.
Yeah, okay. Well, that, yeah. Right.
Georgia turns them out.
But in any event, is there something there? Is this going to be the new breed of Republican going forward? Or can, you know, I can't think of anybody this interesting as these two women in quite a long time. I mean, the Pauls to an extent, Ron and Rand respectively, maybe to an extent, Ron especially, Rand to a much lesser extent, but. These women, I mean, I tell you one thing about Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's doubled down, and she hasn't cucked, and she hasn't apologized. And as much as they've come after her for so-called anti-Semitism over the space laser comment and racism and all of this, I mean, she stuck to her guns. And a lot of Republican men don't do that.
We had one white woman Republican running. I want to say it was Delaware, and I forget her name. I follow her on Twitter. In fact,
we had her on the show.
Yeah, Lauren Witzke.
Now, she talked about white genocide. Now, if you want me to like you, talk about white genocide. If you want to cause some waves, give them the meme of memes. Go classic Whitaker on them and read them the Riot Act on white genocide. Witzke did that, and I do respect that. Now, I would like these other women more if they did that. But just stay to the facts. We got a lot of facts on our side. But anyways, I don't know what to make. I would say as this place goes downhill, we could have a variety of different establishment characters that could come out. I am very leery of this type of thing. I'm very leery of someone coming out looking like they're on our side, talking like us, and then all of a sudden, you know, our guys end up going to jail because we're marching down the street with them.
Like, well, them is that a not-so-thinly-veiled reference to the former president?
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem. This is the theme. We dominate at the language level. Our language, our particular terms, our memes, things like anti-white, things like white genocide, they dominate the internet. They dominate and radiate through society. So if you want to have power, they're grabbing various different things to gain power and to gain that base. But then they're not doing anything for them. And not only are they not doing anything for them, the people that follow them end up in trouble, and they don't get anywhere. They don't get anything. They don't even get so much as, you know, sorry or, you know, that's a problem. This is a big trend, and this is the trend I worry about with, like, Tucker Carlson, who says a lot of good things. But I am really concerned that people are following. You know, we've got all these terms and phrases out there. Various different parties are using them, and they're gaining followers off them, and they're gaining credibility and not delivering anything. And they're certainly not having us on to explain our position. They'll have on the black nationalists. They'll have on the libtards, but they won't have on anyone openly pro-white. And, I mean, there's a lot of good people. Jared Taylor would be a good guest for Tucker Carlson. But he'll have on the opposing side, but he'll never have on our side.
Well, you know, and that's another thing that's changed, Tim, is that, of course, going back, you were talking about the beginning of the political cesspool, the beginning of your work, with the work with Bob Whitaker, which came just very, very shortly thereafter. And but there was a time in the mid-2000s when Jared Taylor and even I were regular guests on primetime shows, even on networks like CNN and of course, those days are long gone.
Gone with the wind.
They'll talk about us now, but they'll never let us speak for ourselves. Not anymore. But it wasn't that long ago that we could. And that's just something that's changed within the last few years. There's a break. Well, I'll tell you, if it was a time to skip a break, it's with a guest like Tim Murdoch. We've had a lot to cover, and there hasn't been a wasted moment. We will take a quick break, though. We'll reset. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
A man so interesting, we don't even take breaks when he's on. That's Tim Murdoch, and he's the only one we can say that for.
We've been hypnotized.
Well, folks, you got to be following him. Listen, he's been on the show several times. The tip of the iceberg for the appearances that we hope that he will grant us going forward. He's one of my very favorite commentators, a great friend of mine, Tim Murdoch. Follow his work at whiterabbitradio.biz, on Twitter at EuroRabbit. And he's obviously always got something thoughtful to say. I was talking to Keith earlier tonight when we were having supper, and I said, you know, Tim's a utility guy. He's not a guy that comes on to talk about a single issue that's his authority. He is an authority on all issues. And you've seen it tonight as we've been talking about the Trump reflections on Trump, the GameStop stock market issues, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert. Again, the thing so interesting to me about that
from the ridiculous to the sublime. He's our man.
Thank you, Keith. The calls to expel these people for thinking for themselves and saying things outside of the box. But there is one more thing we want to talk to Tim about before our time with him. And this has been a fast hour with guests like Tim. It always is. I do want to talk to you about Ricky Vaughn, Tim. And we'll get to that and say, let's just say 2 minutes time. You'll tell us what's going on with Ricky Vaughn. You'll remind us first who Ricky Vaughn is for those who may not remember. We'll get to all that in just a moment. But I'll ask you a leading question that will segue into that. And that would be your thoughts on the first nearly 2 weeks of the Biden regime. I mean, the executive orders, all of the stuff, this guy that's the health czar now. That's, you know,
who's calling the shots? Who is actually preparing all these executive orders that he signed?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, he's got the stack. I mean, what is most interesting to you about what's occurred since January 20th?
It is mask off anti-whiteness. It is mask off anti-whiteness. It's you know, it's as bad as everyone thought it would be. I think what has surprised me is how many states are lining up not to obey. Whether it be his immigration order that Texas just overturned, a Texas judge is holding up. You see, what we found out under Trump, people are forgetting that the federal government doesn't have as many teeth as you think. And so when Trump went in sanctuary cities, he had a big problem because California really didn't have to do that. And so when you go to enforce COVID rules, Idaho doesn't really have to do that. When you go to enforce an immigration rule one way or another, the states don't have to do that. And so now it's the shoe's on the other foot. So watch for more states to start bucking as he goes more and more libtard left and crazy anti-white policies.
That's the thing, Tim. I mean, that, you know, we're seeing it now. I mean, there does seem to be a total lack of decorum now. I mean, the fracturing of America.
Like you said, the mask is off.
Well, I mean, but you've got now, we were talking about this in the first hour, members of the House on the Democratic aisle calling people, Republicans who won't wear masks, calling for them to be arrested on charges of attempted murder for not wearing masks. I mean, it does seem as though it's just hanging together by a thread. Now, that may be wishful thinking, or perhaps it's not as fragile as it appears. But this is really, I think, some of the most interesting times I've lived through.
This is crazy stuff. There are people in the Democratic Party that need to be under lock and key, I think.
Well, and Joe Biden's health czar is one of them, or the assistant health. But anyway, I want to talk to you about Ricky, but first let's take a call from Stan. Stan up in Idaho. Welcome, Stan.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I just wanted to give a shout-out for Tim and also for you two guys, James and Keith. And you know how I discovered that Tim was going to be on was that I have a friend that's on my email list from Greece, and he sent me a notice that this was going to happen tonight. So we are global now. I mean, this is not some
how
local
about that?
Stuff. And what I also wanted to urge James, you, and Keith to do is to invite this guy, Endeavors, who I heard on Thursday night, Tim was interviewing him. He is one of the smartest guys, and just like Tim, I learned something, and he brings a lot to the table, so maybe you can have him as a guest, and Tim can tell you about him. Thanks, guys, and good evening.
Endeavor is a Canadian. He's a newer Canadian on our side, James, and he's a pretty bright young fellow. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I want to thank Stan for the call. I want to thank Stan for his support. I know Stan's history, and he goes back to Bill Rowland. And anybody who goes back to Bill Rowland is a friend of mine. And Stan, you are a friend of ours, and I appreciate you. And yes, between you and Stan, Tim, please pass along to me Endeavor's contact information. We'd love to have him on. Sure. It sounds like a great recommendation. But let's talk about Ricky Vaughn then, Tim. Last thing, we were talking about the most interesting things so far of the Biden regime, and one of the interesting things to me is this indictment that's been handed down to Ricky Vaughn. Now, that was an alias. That was an assumed name. For those who may not remember or those of my audience.
What did he do? And is this as alarming as it sounds? It's, they come and get him for some random comment.
Well, okay, so this is the question, Keith, and that is, I mean, of course, we saw Black Lives Matter for the last 4 years engaged in all sorts of lawlessness. But the Biden Justice Department is now coming for Ricky Vaughn. Again, Tim, without further ado, who was he? What did he do? Why is it significant?
Why should we all be concerned and scared?
Well, Douglas Mackey was involved in the Great Meme War 2016. He was labeled, I think, by MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or some paper involved in that, the 50 most influential Twitter accounts in the election of 2016, the election of Donald Trump. In my opinion, in the dissident right, he caused a lot of waves and a lot of problems. He was kind of like a stir the pot type of guy, which is why I didn't have anything to do with him. With that being said, the question isn't whether or not I like him. It's whether or not they have a case. They're saying he did some type of advertising, manipulating advertising, false advertising, to try to get people to put votes in, like votes by text and votes by email, stuff that wasn't appropriate for the election. I don't know how much of it was just funny memes, how much of it is legit. I just don't know what they have, and I have a feeling we're not seeing the whole entire thing. One of the things that concerned me – go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Tim, very quickly to interject and to paint a better picture, Douglas Mackey is the given name of Ricky Vaughn, which was the online persona. And I've read the official complaint or the indictment, and what they're saying he did was he created memes that looked as though it was coming from the official Hillary Clinton for president campaign, saying that avoid the long lines, text your vote to this number. And they were saying, well, that encouraged, that violated the civil rights of blacks, especially to believe that they didn't have to go vote, that they could text it in. And
right.
they're saying
he paid for
advertising. Well, but what,
right?
What I was going to say, though, right? What I was going to say, if I went to some blog and it said you can vote by telepathy, I would be smart enough not to believe it. But apparently, some people aren't that smart.
Well, I think they're going to enshrine that type of voting in this new federal election.
I was going to say, I mean, after this last election, that's not too far fetched. But anyway, that's the main thing I think they're sinking their hooks into.
I don't know. It is kind of scary because you're talking about you're talking about people going to jail for memes, and that kind of scares me.
For 10 years, too. I mean, he's facing a decade.
Well, that's the tip of the iceberg. What concerns me, let me lay this out for you. In the last Stop the Steal thing prior to the whole entire January 6th ordeal, what we saw was a lot of different intriguing messages being passed around. And what I believe was going on is that certain intelligence agencies like the FBI, certain federal agencies were dying the waters. They were tracing networks for various different messages. And I think, and this is me speculating, but I think in the end this will be true, that we have the dying of the waters with various different messages because they were tracing out networks. And I think they may have caught up, not only Baked Alaska, they busted him for January 6th for live streaming from Nancy Pelosi's office, which was, you know, trespassing, felony, and all that kind of stuff. But they're all in the same group. Paul Neyland, of course, was a federal informant. They got, they're doing something with, there's something going on with Stop the Steal. There was something going on where they were dying the waters, the various different components of our enemy were actually putting out messages, tracing where it would go. Tracing networks, and I think this is something they were prepared to do ahead of time, but that they were dying the waters during the Stop the Steal stuff. My guess is you're going to see all kinds of stuff come up during that, and Douglas Mackey and everything else. I just might.
Well, and
guess,
then between Douglas Mackey slash Ricky Vaughn, 10 years for, you know, This is, commercial radio, so we'll say crap lording. But all the stuff that they're going after these people that wandered into the Capitol and hitting them with federal charges and indictments. I mean, it is going to be a rocky, tumultuous time, and our people need to be ready mentally, physically, spiritually. But, Tim, I got to tell you, this hour has gone by far too quickly. Doing it once a month wouldn't be often enough. Keith, final word.
Well, just think about what they're doing to the people that just happened to attend that protest on January the 6th and Charlottesville. What if they had done that to the black protesters at Selma and Birmingham and Memphis back in the day and came after those protesters?
Rights. You wouldn't have civil rights.
Absolutely. That's exactly, and see, that's what we need to learn from protests. Protests only work when the establishment want them to work.
Tim is one of the very best we've got. Tim Murdoch, WhiteRabbitRadio.biz. Follow him until his next appearance on TPC. Tim, appreciate all your help, your love and support. We'll talk to you again soon, and it can't come quickly enough. Thank you, buddy, for being with us for an hour tonight. We've got Jason Kuna when we come back.
God bless you guys.
Thank you.
You too, buddy.